the website analytics that we're talking about, like Google or whatever, is what we call quantifiable. It's numbers, right? It's how many people did this? How many people did that? Where did they do it? It doesn't tell us why. And so we can, well, guess, we can create theories. Okay, so let's say the key call to action on the page is at the bottom of the page, which it often is, and most people don't see the bottom of the page. That means they don't see the call to action. So what we need to do is to try something different and test it.
Welcome to Biz Help for You, the show that saves you the expensive learning curve by providing advice from industry experts in every facet of the entrepreneurial journey. Too many small businesses collapse. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 20% fail within their first year, and less than 35% make it to their 10th anniversary. The goal of this podcast is to change that statistic. So if you're interested in learning more to be a successful entrepreneur, tune in today.
Let me tell you a little bit about my guest today. Philippa Games boasts over 25 years of expertise in digital marketing strategy and analytics, having collaborated with close to 500 clients and contributed to websites generating hundreds of millions of dollars. Owners and marketing executives enlist Philippa's services to unearth valuable insights within their web analytics, driving business growth and efficiency by pinpointing overlooked opportunities. Her track record spans North America, Europe, and the Middle East, where she translates data into actionable strategies that propel businesses forward, identify new market potentials, and optimize ROI. You can glean from her extensive experience the importance of leveraging data analytics to uncover hidden opportunities and maximize business growth effectively. So, Philippa, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Candy.
So before I get into any questions I have for you on the topic, I'd love for you just to share a little bit about your story and how you began working in digital marketing.
Wow. So as you said, I've been around for a little bit. And, you know, I think I have a background, believe it or not, in archive. I'm an archivist originally, which is kind of the other opposite end of all of this. But I kind of got into computing by getting into computerized archives and sort of computerizing catalogs, which, you know, is information science, and this kind of went on from there. I began to get very interested in communicating using technology, I guess. And so, you know, for me, I guess I'm a sort of techie because I'm a kind of data geek, but I'm not interested in technology for technology's sake. I'm interested in what it can do to help us communicate better. So I think that sort of explains why. And having been around in digital marketing for a while, I one of the things that I think is great is that I've got, you know, you see things come and go, right? So you see the stuff that is like the latest bright, shiny object that isn't around for very long, and the stuff that endures, and how actual marketing principles translate into digital, but essentially the principles remain the same. And so, you know, people think about digital marketing as a whole different discipline, but in some ways it really isn't. It's just doing it a little bit differently, and the ways that we do it, you know, constantly evolve. I mean, one of the I don't know if it's a downside, or on some days when I've got lots of energy, I think it's exciting, and when I get tired, I get tired, because, you know, it changes all the time, right? I mean, I teach. I love teaching, and I've taught at business schools around. You know, you can't give the same lesson twice without making sure that everything you're saying is still relevant and still up to date. And I mean, there's not a lot of disciplines maybe where that's as obviously in science, scientific research, that kind of field. But maybe other disciplines, maybe a little less so. You know.
Right. Well, even while you were talking, it just brought back memories of, you know, me being in school and having to do research papers and going to the library and having to get microfiche and getting the stuff in, going, you know, turning the little thing to find that page we had to look for, you know, and now it's so much easier by doing like Google searches or, you know, finding resources online. So I know just thinking through the years how that has made so much easier in terms of finding information.
Well, and of course, if you could get, of course, these days you can get AI to write your paper for you, which may or may not be a good approach. We won't go with that.
Yeah, hopefully people are still doing their own work, but that's right. Another topic, I guess, for another day. But I would love for you to even talk about, a lot of times when people think of websites too, they think, well, that's kind of old school now. There's so many other things that we could do. There are apps and social media and all of that too. So I'd love for you to touch on first, like, why is it still important to have a website and the type of information they still should be putting on their website?
So, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, one thing about social media that I think is a very common myth is that, you know, you don't own your social media presence. And a lot of people think you do. It's part of what we call owned media, which is stuff you have full control of. But social media, I mean, you can control the content that you put onto a social media platform, but you don't control the way it looks. I mean, a given platform can change its look and feel at any point. And it can also change its terms and conditions about to what extent it owns what you put on there. Right. I remember that when Pinterest first started, I think their very first sort of terms and conditions said that they actually, anything you post, they then own and have the rights to, which of course there was a huge outcry about. But I do know people who, for example, have been banned from social media because you can complain. Like you can complain to Facebook about any given page, business page, for example, that the owner has done something bad. And I mean, I know one guy whose all his links to his e-commerce site got frozen because somebody complained to Facebook. And the problem is that you can't just call Facebook and say, okay, let's talk about this. So, and it took him several months to get his links back. And it was quite an established site with a lot of visitors. So, I mean, that was a huge economic hit. So, you know, there is that. There is the control issue. Apps a lot of development. I mean, you know, typically the average person with the average phone doesn't use most of the apps that they have on their phone very often. So an app really only works if you've got a very compelling reason why somebody's going to use it on a regular basis, going to justify all your development and promotional costs. And of course, some apps do work that way. I use my banking app a lot, for example, or you know, something like that. But you know, you have to think about the use case for an app. With a website, clearly you've got full control. You own it. You can control what it looks like. And in addition to people who hopefully are going to buy your stuff, one of the other things that a website does is it's your corporate presence in the world. And people come to your website to check you out. And a lot of businesses don't take this into account. So for example, I know people where, you know, if you go to your bank for a loan, the bank is likely to check out your website these days to see what you say. And I actually know businesses where, I know a business, for example, I had a business in one of my programs recently where they'd been denied an insurance policy because of something that their website said about something that they were doing. And they, you know, this stuff you wouldn't necessarily think about, but people, it's part of people who are not about to buy from you, but people who are going to do some sort of business with you doing their due diligence. And so you have to bear in mind that there are wider audiences for your website than just potential customers.
Right. So how could someone use information that they can get regarding how their website is being seen, used, you know, whether it's different countries or genders or, you know, ages and things like that, to actually make their products and services more attractive to those that they are trying to target?
Yeah. So now you're talking about analytics, website analytics, which is one of my favorite specialties in what I do. You know, the best known program for that is Google Analytics. But Google Analytics has reasonably new version called Google Analytics 4. Which a lot of people aren't too happy with because it's much more complicated than the previous version. I have to say, as somebody who specializes in it, it's very, very powerful, and it's much more powerful. It's very customizable. So you can tell all sorts of really interesting things about your own website if you customize it. Out of the box, it won't necessarily do what you want. in that specific sense. So it's a great program, but you know, an analytics tool. So there are other tools in Europe. PeerWeek is very popular, for example, but it tells you what people do on your website. So where they go, what they interact with. You can tell really interesting things like how much, if you have video, how much of the video do they watch? A lot of business owners don't, they spend tons of money on creating amazing videos and they don't realize that because they start out with, hello, my name is, and blah, 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 blah. And people get very, very bored very quickly and they drop. So by the time they get to the good stuff in their content, nobody's watching it. Without analytics, you wouldn't know that.
Right. So I think because, too, you said it could be complicated though, too. So I think sometimes we feel overwhelmed.
Yes.
Then how do we even figure it all out?
And another very overwhelming thing is the sheer amount of data. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you open up your analytics program and it's got all sorts of different reports and ways to cut and dice. And, you know, and it can be very overwhelming to people who aren't used to it or haven't thought about what they want to know. And that's where we get to what we call vanity metrics. You know, where somebody goes, oh, I ought to look at my analytics. Well, okay. Do we have more, you know, X? Do we have more visitors than we did last week? And if the answer is yes, they go, oh, good, it's working, and go away. Because it, you know, it's difficult to go beyond that without some path in. But honestly, the question of do we have more visitors than we did last week? If the answer is yes, there's a so what that goes with that. Right. So if there are lots and lots of visitors who never buy anything from you, then what's the point? Right. You'd rather have fewer visitors who are actually your ideal customers.
Right. So I guess, too, then do you have maybe some key things to look at when they log in? Because, again, like you said, there could be so much data. How do we know what is the most important to really look at? How do we filter information to find what we need? Again, because like you said, you could go in there and not even know where to begin.
But that goes to your business strategy. I mean, so you've got to know what you want your visitors to do. Mm-hmm. So I kind of have a saying that every page of your website should have a strategy. So not just, you know, the website overall. But it's actually really important to know what you want somebody to do as a result of seeing every single page. Because if you don't drive people, you know, what in marketing we call the call to action, if you don't drive people towards what you want them to do, they very likely won't do it because there are so many other things to do. There's other on your site or other sites, right? And I've seen that a lot. And often business owners will say, but look, it's right there. And I'll say, you know, it's right there because you're so used to looking at it. It's yours. You're so close to it that you can't any longer see how people who are not familiar with it will see it, which is why analytics is helpful. I mean, you know, you can apply things like heat maps that show you or other ways to show you what people look at. With analytics, you can also see, for example, how far down the page they scroll. So that's a big thing, because if you have a long page and you've got important content at the bottom of the page, if nobody sees, the same as the video, right? If people haven't gone there, they're not going to see it. And again, without the analytics, you wouldn't know. You can't know how far down the page people are looking.
So is that something that the website owner has to set up, or is it already just looking at that information and you just have to know where to find those details when you log into your analytics?
So it depends on the tool that you're using, and it can be a mix. So for example, when you set Google Analytics out of the box, it automatically measures when somebody goes 90% of the way down the page, which it basically says they see almost all of, if not all of the page. When I work with clients, I tend to customize that to say, show me 25, 50, 75, 90%, just so that I get a clearer, I mean, you know, 90% is a lot, but, you know, do people see half the page? Or so I get a wider picture. So that's an example of the sort of customization that you can do just to give you a little more information.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So what are some of the mistakes maybe that people make when it comes to their websites and like using the analytics, or, you know, setting it up, not setting it up properly? Like maybe what are the things that you could tell us as those who don't really know how to use this properly, right? What we need to know so that we're using it effectively.
Well, so again, that goes back to what's your strategy. So, I mean, if you're not using it effectively, well, firstly, obviously, it would be helpful to have somebody knowledgeable make sure that the data is being correctly collected and fully as much as you can. And the more you customize it to what you want, the better. But also, if you don't have a goal in mind, as we've already said, you're just looking at lots and lots of numbers and you don't know where to start. And then you go to, by default, you'll go to the vanity stuff and just, you know, how many visitors do we get? How many sales did we get? How many signups did we get? One big mistake that a lot of people make is to do what I've just said. So people will go, where did our visitors come from? Because they want to know if they're doing paid ads, whether that's paying off. They want to know how's our SEO doing and so forth. So they'll focus on, how do we get visitors? And then they'll focus on, you know, the outcomes, how many sales, et cetera, how many signups. What they don't necessarily look at is the piece in the middle. You know, in marketing, we call it the customer journey, right? So there's a point between where the visitor first hears of you and first comes to your site. And then when they're in what we call the consideration stage, because most people don't necessarily buy the very first time they see a website. And so they want to know who you are and they want to see what you talk about and they want to get an idea of, you know, whether they like you and trust you and want to do business with you. And that's all about the engagement part of the site, which is about your content, your videos, your blog, you know, what you have to say, your social proof, maybe your About Us page. And all of those are really important. And people do spend time creating them because, especially if they want SEO and stuff, but often they don't measure how effective they are in terms of actually engaging visitors and driving them towards the next steps. So they tend to focus on the first step, which is getting the visitor and the end result. But you know, in the old days we had bounce rate. I think, you know, we have bounce rate back in Google Analytics, but people used to obsess about the bounce rate, which is how many people come to my website, take one look at it and walk away. And, you know, okay, yes, that's somewhat important, but wouldn't you rather focus on the people who stay, spend some time looking around, and then don't do what you want? Because you had a chance with those people and you didn't get it. So what went wrong?
That's a good point. So what would you say, how would they even determine that then by seeing like, okay, someone was on my page for, you know, 90 seconds or something. So they were interested, but now, you know, they're gone. Like, how do I know where the problem lies?
Well, you don't. So that's the interesting thing about the website analytics that we're talking about, like Google or whatever. Is what we call quantifiable. It's numbers, right? It's how many people did this? How many people did that? Where did they do it? It doesn't tell us why. And so we can create theories. Okay. So let's say the key call to action on the page is at the bottom of the page, which it often is. Most people don't see the bottom of the page. That means they don't see the call to action. So what we need to do is to try something different and test it. So I often like to say, you know, I can come up with all sorts of theories, but what we need to do is test. So we can move or duplicate, even better, duplicate the call to action, right? Include a call to action further up where people will see it, see if that makes a difference. I mean, so what you have to do is start saying, well, what if we tried this? And actually, that's one of the things I love about analytics is that, you know, it's very geeky, but at some point you get creative. You know, what about if we try this? Or what about if we tried a whole new approach to this? But often, if you really want to know things like that, you need to include what we then call qualitative analytics as opposed to quantitative, which is which is the intangibles that you need to actually ask users. So you can combine it with, you know, some actual user focus work, have a focus group or surveys or asking current customers. If you have a new website, one of the a great thing to do can be to ask people who haven't seen it. I mean, it can be your friends, doesn't matter, but somebody who hasn't seen it before, give them a task to do on the site and then stand behind them. I mean, don't obviously influence them in any way, and watch what they do and watch where they get stuck, or say, you know, find this or carry out an action that you can do on the site and see what happens. That can be really, really helpful.
That's a great tip too. You know, I don't know if I never even thought of that. You know, I mean, we created a new website last year, had to update things, and I had some insight from the designer, you know, and they suggested some things, and I said kind of what I needed, but never thought of saying, hey, could you go find out how to do X, or can you find this podcast episode, or, you know, something like that. So I think that's a really good tip to put out there, like have someone else do it. And as you're monitoring them, then you can see like, oh, I thought this would be easy, you know, but right. It's not.
Well, and the point is, as I said earlier, you get so close to your own stuff. I mean, you've planned it, you've been thinking about it for a long time. You know, you've been working with a designer. It's really no longer obvious to you how the rest of the world's going to see it. And it's not your fault, but it's really worth testing.
Well, and earlier you mentioned SEO a couple times too, and I would love for you maybe to share a tip or two that would help us improve our SEO on our own website so we can be found. So then we can use the analytics, right, to say someone did find us and now what happened afterwards.
Right. And I should say really off the bat, I'm not an SEO expert. I know enough to be dangerous, but my my key thing is strategy and analytics. But SEO, I mean, what Google, which is clearly also the main search engine, emphasizes is good quality content. So it's not about cramming as many keywords as you can on a page. That's very old and no longer the case. In fact, it's counterproductive. But to think about having pages which are centered around a concept, you know, a keyword, and do some research, like what are our users, what are the people that we want to see our stuff looking for? One of the things is that's important is to think about the language and the words that your customers and your prospects use, because occasionally that can be different, especially if you're in a more technical industry. Right, that can be different than the way you would think about it.
Right.
So, I mean, even something like accountants, right? Accountants have a whole load of jargon.
Exactly. I was thinking that we have to sometimes use just plain English. Don't use like these business terms.
Because your users may well not be going to a search engine and typing in a load of accountant language. So really being aware of that can be very useful. And if you happen to have a site with a lot of content that has a search engine on it, so your own site search that's within your site, not the Google search, again, that can be a goldmine because analytics can track that. So the analytics can track what do people put into your search engine that's on your own site. And that is really helpful information because it tells you, it answers for a start, it answers that question. What words do they use? That means that's looking for stuff that they expect you to have.
Right.
It's also, by the way, therefore great content ideas. Like if they're asking for things that they expect you to have, but you don't have yet. You know, I've worked with clients. We've created whole new products around what we see in the internal, in the site search engine. So it's really a goldmine that is extremely underused because most people don't even think about tracking that stuff.
So how often do you suggest looking at analytics, like weekly, monthly, quarterly? You know, like what is kind of that pace that we should be taking the time? Because again, it could be so much data overwhelming. We don't want to look at it daily probably, but what is a good amount of time to spend and how often?
Yeah. So one of the key things is to focus and prioritize. So you don't want to measure everything all at once, because what are you going to do with the information? Like if you look at every single metric you possibly could, you can't improve because you don't know what to focus on. You don't know what to test. And if you make changes and you test stuff, you can't test everything because then you don't know what caused the change. Mm-hmm. Right. So honestly, when I work with clients, we have a measurement plan that prioritizes, you know, maybe three things that they're currently trying to work on and improve. And that might be the conversion rate for sales. It might be acquisition through a specific marketing channel. You know, it might be content consumption. But really don't try and measure more than three to five things at once. And those three to five things should have a so what to them. They should be something that you're proactively looking at improving or reducing costs or whatever it is, so that when you get the result of the metric, you know what you're looking for and maybe what you're going to do as a result of seeing how it's going. And those those can change. I mean, that doesn't have to be like you select three to five KPIs and you change them. Of course, you're going to change them. It also depends on what's going on. I mean, if you've got a new product launch, for example, or you're running a new ad campaign, you might want to look at the metrics for that even several times a day, right? Especially if you're pouring money into advertising. And then maybe some aspects like maybe your video consumption that you want to monitor every month or something, right? I wouldn't necessarily say do it once a quarter. That doesn't really sound very involved, but you know, because
ones that maybe you don't need to look at as often. Yeah, again, I'm not sure. That's why we're having this conversation.
Right. So. Yeah. And a lot of the time, I mean, you know, one of my favorite kind of jibes at myself, if you like, because I'm a consultant, is when you hire a consultant, you have to pay lots of money and then you have to even take me out to lunch if we're local. But the point is that whatever question you ask, the answer from a consultant is very often it depends. Because it does. Because there isn't necessarily a one size fits all answer. Excuse me. So it depends on your business's specific situation and needs at any given time.
Perfect. Well, I do want to ask, because we're coming to the end of our episode today, like if there's an offer that you would like to share with our listeners, and also if they want more information, how can they connect with you?
Yeah, great. So thank you. So I'm on LinkedIn, and hopefully you'll put these links in the show notes, right? So I'm on LinkedIn, happy to connect on LinkedIn. My website is websitesthatwin.com. And I do actually, yes, I have a giveaway. So I have an ebook, which is five hidden gems. It's five stories from my actual experience where we looked at analytics for five different businesses, different industries, and found things that we could not have known without the analytics data that allowed us to make a significant change either in the website or in the business strategy. And my goal, it's all in English. There's no charts. There's no analytics in it. It tells you a little bit about how to find the data that I'm talking about in English, if you want. But it's non-techie. It's designed for business owners. And my goal is to give business owners some inspiration, like it explains what the situation was and what we looked at. And to give them inspiration to maybe say, I wonder if that could be happening on my site or if I could apply that to my site. So to make analytics a bit more fun, because I know for a lot of people it's intimidating. But anybody's welcome to come to my website and pick that up. It's absolutely free.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Philippa, for being a guest on my show. I enjoyed our conversation and learning a little bit more from you on your expertise here with analytics and websites.
Thank you very much.
And to the listener, if you enjoyed today's topic and you want to hear additional information, you can find access to the exclusive content in our resources in the show notes.
Thank you for tuning in today. Would you please share this episode with those you know and leave a review on your favorite platform? And if you find our show informative, would you consider being a financial sponsor to help me continue my mission to educate business owners? A link is located in the episode description, and no amount is too small. I'd really appreciate your support. If you are interested in connecting with our guest and receiving the offer they had to share, a link to our resource page is in the show notes. Finally, if you have any bookkeeping or payroll needs, reach out to us at 310-534-5577 or contact at abandp.com. My team and I are eager to assist you. Until next time, have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Biz Help for You. Please join your host, Candy Messer, again next time. Have a terrific day.